Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So all the rhetoric surrounding what's going on in Afghanistan, all the blame on Biden, it's all Biden's fault. All the division over the death of our soldiers. And it's all by design, as I've said for the longest time. This is a way to keep the working class of this country pitted against one another, to keep that constant rage, that constant chaos in place. But the question comes down to, is this solely the work of the wealth class dividing us so that we don't realize how badly we've been getting screwed for the last 40 years? Is this them and their mayhem makers? Is this the Russians? Is it the North Koreans, the Iranians? Or is it the Chinese? Or is it all of them? And here to share some thoughts on, you know, how is this going to affect how we deal with the international community, especially the Chinese? Because I see them as, well, I'm seeing them kind of finding their way into the middle of this. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what this might look like, I've asked our good friend Emily Delaburé to come talk with us. She's the co-founder of Horizon Advisory, horizonadvisory.org, their website. She's my go-to expert on all China. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
So am I overly concerned about the Chinese finding their way into Afghanistan? And, well, Afghanistan's rich in minerals. They're rich in a bunch of things. Am I concerned about that?
It's a tough one, and one that goes in every direction. Wherever China's concerned or is involved, let's say, not wrong to be concerned, would be a first hot take. And on the Afghanistan question in particular, I mean, I think Beijing is rightfully a little ambivalent. On the one hand, it's absolutely been in China's interest to see the US diverting its attention towards the Middle East, diverting resources there, strained, and also seeing its global profile decrease as a result of our presence. And also, it's absolutely in China's interest to see the U.S. now on the retreat and being viewed as a failed power, absolutely, in this engagement. However, China doesn't want instability in the Middle East. That's really bad for them. They worry about what it means for global resources, what it means for terrorism, including terrorism on their border, and just for general instability that can directly affect their domestic affairs. And they don't want to be sucked into what they see as endless conflict and unresolvable conflict in that region. Like, they don't want to have to be the players with a military presence in the Middle East. And the US has been doing that for China, for the world, for years now. That said, we know that Beijing is adept at taking advantage of any opening that we leave China. And this is bound to be no exception. There's already been the outreach between Beijing and the Taliban. They know where to find resources that matter. And you know, this is an empowered China over the past year that's not going to shirk from any opportunity.
Right. And I look at the stunt that they tried to pull in Vietnam ahead of Vice President Kamala Harris's visit, where I guess she was delayed for a couple of minutes. And they tried to swoop in and say, no, instead of the 1 million or the 1 billion doses of whatever the vaccine, we're going to give you two. And again, it's what they do. It does show how emboldened they think they are.
And really, up until about a year ago, this was a China that played, you know, kind of a game in the wake of the US and was absolutely competing with America, but was doing so like by being the spoiler on the corner or right behind. And now Beijing is like absolutely willing to do that, to get in front of the story, and to be on the center stage going blow for blow. And you know, that was true in Vietnam with the vaccines. It's going to be true across the board. And it's what, you know, is true of rhetoric coming out of China. They have this new buzzword phrase of dual circulation that everyone's talking about and no one quite understands, but what it effectively means is that China now sees itself as the driving force for how things are moving internationally.
And I would argue a lot of that has to do with our misadventures in the Middle East, our divisions at home especially, because, look, I don't view the Taliban as a dangerous force to me in any way, shape, or form right now. And I don't view them as dangerous as perhaps some of the people that live in my neighborhood and some of the insanity that we've been seeing with our domestic terrorists who are now terrorizing our school board meetings.
There's a story that we're not like necessarily talking about right now, which is that so domestically we have this insane division and fragmentation and everything moving in opposite directions. And at the same time in China, we're seeing an absolute crackdown intended to put everybody on the same page and in line with the Chinese Communist Party. And both of these stories are being covered individually, but they're not being put together in terms of the asymmetry this creates and what it means that we're getting one player crack down on its authoritarian control over the entire society while the other player fails for even 1 second to be on the same page.
And again, you know, we've talked about this before, where our freedoms have really been our biggest downfall, especially when dealing with China, because they come in, they buy things up. They basically leave us with empty shells of factories and you know, manufacturing capacity and beyond. I mean, like you said, they're walking in the same direction while we're ripping each other apart. It is one and the same story, I think.
Which is going to be, I mean, just to absolutely switch onto a whole other news headline or story right now, that's going to be the big question of the infrastructure bill. If we're putting that money into American infrastructure, like that's the kind of thing that can restore some degree of U.S. cohesion, at the very least, like U.S. manufacturing. But historically, that's also been the kind of thing where China comes in and does all the infrastructure building and uses American spending as an opportunity to be an even stronger presence in the U.S. And you know, further virtualize our economy and further tear us apart. So that's going to be, like, I think a really, we've gotten to this point with the idea that there's a commitment to spend money, kind of. And the real question is going to be, how is that money spent? And is it something that defends against what China's doing or feeds into it?
No, and that's the one thing that I think does unite us as a country. And I no matter who I talk to, if it's a flag waving Trump supporter, it's you know, Buy American provisions in our procurement policies. It's making sure that the steel we're using is made here in the U.S. The welders that are doing the job are from here in the U.S. I think that's one of those things that could potentially, if this was done right, actually bring us, you know, back to somewhere near, maybe not together, but at least somewhere in the same arena.
Yeah. And on board with what's taking place, like with what our leadership is doing. Because then you can have some amount of faith that there's actually an effort to restore the U.S. real economy and jobs in America and to provide services to Americans, because that's what infrastructure does. So like this is like the big opportunity, but then what happens if China does what it did in 2008-09 and at every other juncture it's had and make sure that its Chinese companies start providing this deal?
No, and I don't blame them. Look, I don't blame them at all.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant. Yeah. They're simply figuring out how to use our rules against us. And we allow it to happen. You know, I've been saying our trade deals are bad, are horrible, abysmal. But I don't blame them for doing it to us. I blame us for allowing it to happen. If you steal my lunch out of my hand, it's my fault for letting you do it.
Oh, yeah, like I wish we were playing as smart as they are. It's mind blowing. And like they are better at our legal system than we are, which is insane. And they're better at recruiting like the best US lawyers to be good at our legal system than we are. And that's not a great position to be in.
No, but then again, it comes back down to the money and the hidden money and all of the resources that go into keeping us divided. And that's why I keep asking, who is it that's funding these groups? Because it's eerily familiar as you go from state to state to state, where all of these people are all on the same page. They're all barking the same orders. They're all making the same threats. There's coordination here, and there's a funding mechanism that is moving them in this direction.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to be the one, you know, to be spouting major conspiracies, but like it's true that all of that does benefit China. And even if they're not the direct player, they're absolutely going to be ready to amplify any message that's in their interest and to make sure it reaches the people that it's in their interest for them to reach. And there's also like no question that Chinese policy and discourse are very clear about how important and easy it is to influence the subnational level in the US. Like, they have a whole line of efforts that's about developing state and local level influence over governments, over private sector industry players, over like cultural and educational institutions. And the idea is, like, if not necessarily to be the player that's spreading the narrative, then to create a fertile landscape for that narrative so that everybody is ready to believe or to think whatever is in China's interest.
So how come that's not, you know, how come that's not across every headline, and every person in this country isn't on the top of the brain? Because I'll tell you, you know, when I look at their manufacturing prowess, and I look at the number of jobs that we have in manufacturing at this moment, and maybe it's just because I'm a manufacturing geek, I'm like, you know, we have fewer jobs than we had when my grandparents were alive and working, and we were a fifth of the population. You know, I mean, there's something wrong, Houston, and it comes back down to what we build. It comes back to our supply chains. It comes back to the policies that we've allowed to get rammed through so that a handful of people could get really rich and a generation of workers could get screwed.
Yeah, and we're at the point where, so like base level economics, that's really bad for the country, but we're also at the point where this is like fundamental national security. Like, we can't make what we need to like maintain our military. And that's, we should be at a point where everybody can agree that this is a really, like a very real problem, not just the people who recognize the value of manufacturing for an economy and for a society to be maintained. Because at least there's supposed to be a consensus that we need a military and we need to self-protect. And we're so far in the red. And I'm not sure anybody is out there with the headlines agreeing.
No, it's crazy where we are. So the question is, you know, is there a way to undo the direction we're heading? Because as you've said, you know, China views itself as the superpower of the next generation. And, you know, we and the rest of the globe, I don't know what the answer is going forward.
Yeah, and so China's big playbook is not only, you know, beat us at our game and not only, you know, subsidize and use non-market measures to take over strategic industries and manufacturing. It's also to target the new domains, you know, that technology is creating in particular as quote unquote leapfrog opportunities, and especially to build the infrastructures of those new domains. So there's a category called new infrastructures. It's been a huge deal in Chinese industrial policy for the past 3 years, and that's where the real push is. And we talk here about, oh, there's a science and technology race. We have to beat them at AI. We have to beat them at big data. Beijing echoes, like, believes that, but their focus isn't on the research and development. It's on building the real economy and the infrastructures that are necessary to support those technologies. So electric vehicle charging stations, data centers, the industrial Internet of Things, high-speed rail, everything that's like physical and without which we can't apply these technologies, but also that you can use to project them and their power internationally. And, you know, it's a brilliant strategy. Again, like, they're doing this right. But I also like to think that, you know, as we lose ground, that also is an opportunity for us. It is a new battle that's like taking place in terms of manufacturing and in terms of the industrial competition, because technology is making it such. And China's been going about it in a smarter way, but we're still just at the starting line because these technologies really still are just taking shape. So if we can take our infrastructure efforts and our like newfound consensus on the need for this and on manufacturing and point it in the smart direction, which is towards like actually applying new technologies and building the infrastructures that are going to allow like not just the research and development, but the infrastructures that are going to allow our society to take advantage of that and to have relatively similar access to it, that resolves so much. That takes care of manufacturing. It makes us more competitive in new domains. And it also provides the basic access to services like networks and connectivity that can let our society like actually have some degree of opportunity access,
right,
pervasively, and that we don't have in a world where there's like no wireless in much of the country.
So last line of questioning I want to get into, because, you know, we want to get to where you're talking about going. The right will tell you the way we get there is we cut taxes, we cut regulation, and we let the free market decide. Those on the left are going to go, no, no, we need targeted investment. We need smart policy. We need a big, chunky infrastructure bill, like the $3.5 trillion bill, like the $1.2 trillion. We need that. And even I would argue we need more. We need something even bigger than the $1.2 trillion hard infrastructure bill. Is either side right? Is there a blend? How do you see a way to get where we need to go?
In any area that's strategic, if we absolutely just let the free market, we're going to get China because they're going to bend the free market to their will, or not their will, but to their interests. And I think, you know, that just, it means we need industrial policy. We can't, because we're not China, have the same kind of state-led model that they do, because that's just not how we work. But yeah, we need targeted industrial policy that includes Made in America provisions and that supports U.S. manufacturing in vertically integrated supply chains, or at least loosely vertically integrated supply chains. So we're not just making the end product, we're also making the multiple steps along it. That's going towards the targeted areas that matter. And ideally, it's not clunky and it's not, you know, the government trying to figure out how things work, but it is smart and focused on the right areas.
As I say, I'm not against the idea of public-private partnerships. I'm not against the use of public money to do private ventures, just as long as the public benefits from it. If we need roads or bridges, I'm not against the idea of hiring a private company to do it with certain parameters in place. But ultimately, it's got to benefit we the people. We don't use public money to put up a toll road for private interests to cash in on. It just seems counterintuitive. So for me, it's got to be smart investment. We're going to see where this goes. And sadly, I don't have a lot of hope for where we are in this country in this moment, especially as we are this divided. But Emily, I appreciate you taking some time and sharing your expertise. As always, great stuff.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff. Our good friend Emily Delabrouillet. Make sure you check out their website, horizonadvisory.org. Good stuff there. We'll take a quick break right here. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.